greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
Mrs. Robinson, you're trying to seduce me.
I'll have what she's having.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to yet another episode of Real Talk Extra. I am MC Adam, and I have my main man, Onyeka.
What's up?
Onyeka.
How you doing, guys?
How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
So I have a name for you, and her name is Sofia Vergara. I hope I said her name correctly.
Yeah.
Because if you notice that last week when we're discussing about Griselda Blanco, her name just totally skipped my mind. I'm like, oh boy. This is something that can actually happen. And I mean, if you're trying to do a podcast about movies, the least you can do.
Get the name right.
He's trying to get the name right. Or, you know, open up Dr. Google or anything. I know I keep calling him Dr. Google.
It probably feels like a doctor still.
I mean, maybe Google answers all the questions in this world right
Professor
now.
Professor Google.
I mean, or anything, any question you have, they will answer it for you. So it's something. So anyways, I did have a chance to see it, and I think it lived reasonably up to the hype. But, you know, for me, any movie that has her in it, I probably would want to see it at the end of the day, because I kind of like, you know, I like her acting. And so, anyways, we are making this particular podcast on the day before Valentine's Day. The day that there is, you know, and for a moment, Jake, I want to pick your brain on something, really. Like, let's just be frank now. I want to pick your brain on something. You see, I don't know whether it's the same for you as it is for me, but I feel like over the years, you know, your concept of what a romantic movie should be. I don't know whether it is like, you know, you're looking back as, let's say, a Julia Roberts in Notting Hill, or you're thinking about, you know, a Julia Roberts in A Pretty Woman, or, you know, let me think of another one, like, let's say, you know, Titanic as an example, you know, I don't even know if it's reasonable enough for me to describe Titanic as a,
I don't think Titanic works as also as a romantic movie, so to speak. You know, there's romance in it, but it feels more like a drama.
Yeah.
For me, anyway.
Yeah. I mean, there's an element of romance in it, right? But, you see, I used to, because, you see, I came from a generation of guys who, there was something called Mills and Boone. During my, you know, and the Mills and Boone novels, honestly, I was more of the J.T. Edson, James Hadley Chase guys. Yes, I'm putting my age out there. However, the Mills and Boone genre, you know, had the doctor nurse romance. So I feel like my relationship with romantic movies over the years, or what is it actually defined as romantic movies, it has evolved. It has evolved over the years, like most things in society. I mean, what is your definition of a romantic movie?
Guy gets girl, girl gets guy. Anything else is not a romantic movie. You know, the normal guy sees girl, or, you know, let me say the traditional sense, you know, guy sees girl, falls in love.
The traditional sense. You know, you can't even say in the society we are living in right now, you can't even define romantic movie as guy meets girl anymore.
That, you know, that's why I said
let's just old school
sense. Hey, you guys should forgive me. I'm a bit old school as well. In the older movies, older genres, somebody gets somebody. Okay. Now, or should I say, it's a binary person gets another binary person.
That binary person.
I'm using the new lingo now. You know.
Anyway, the thing for me is that let's keep it within. Like, if you see the context of movies now, romantic movies, let's call it what it is. Like, if you say like Pretty Woman, Notting Hill, like a huge movie, Hollywood movie star falls in love with a random guy because she's trying to find a sense of self, you know, let people not see her as a movie star, but see her as a person, which at the time, I mean, I don't know if I watch a movie like that right now. I think I'm watching it with some kind of, nostalgia or something. But I'm trying to say, like, now, what has been defined as a romantic movie now has evolved, because it actually used to be like, okay, two people meet each other, which is basically a family plot. Now, if these two people meet each other, then there are storylines revolving around the people around them. And then what actually constitutes the story sometimes is that you must have some element of conflict. Now, when there is conflicts, you know, it jazzes up the story. At some point, it appears that the relationship between these two individuals are not working out the way it's supposed to be working out. And you know, it gets complicated and it looks a little bit extreme, like it's never going to work out. And eventually, you know, they come back to each other, and then the movie, you know, kind of like, I don't know if I'm right to say they leave happily ever after.
I think that's the I don't think there's any romantic movie that doesn't have happily ever after as a theme. It's very
Titanic,
rare.
I mean, if you want to define Titanic as a romantic movie now, then
Titanic is not a romantic movie.
It's not a romantic. It's not a romantic. Okay.
In my opinion, anyway.
It's a romantic adventure.
It has a few romantic scenes, you know, that famous scene of Leonardo DiCaprio, you know, standing behind, what's her name now? This is about names again. Rachel Weisz. No. Rachel Weisz, where you know, when they're standing at the stern of the boats and her hands are wide open. And
hey, this is another gaffe. This is another gaffe we're about to make. I thought that was Kate Blanchett. Anyway,
Kate Winslet. Kate Winslet, you are correct.
Yes. Yeah, okay.
Ain't no gaffe there.
Okay. So you were saying that they were standing
that's a famous scene. You know, there was a time a lot of people defined romance with that whole gesture of him standing behind her, and Celine Dion is playing in the score of the movie, you know, wherever you go, well, you know, that song, that famous song.
Monique, I don't do it.
I almost went there, you know. I said, let me show you my falsetto. So, you know, apart from that scene, I don't really see much romance. Okay, maybe the romance was in the fact that, you know, he did his best to keep her alive despite all that was happening around them. And, you know, she stood by him in some way, you know, even though for those who haven't watched Titanic, he died.
I mean, whoever is trying to watch Titanic now already knows the end. I want to believe they know the end, but it's not really my issue here is that if you say that a romantic movie, so let us say a romantic movie is not defined as something that is a forever happy forever after. We say Titanic is not a romantic movie.
For me, it's not, but you know, thinking back on it, one of the most famous stories had ends with a tragedy. Romantic stories, Romeo and Juliet.
Very good evidence. In fact, very good argument to show why.
So even though I was trying to say it one way, I just thought about it now. Like, okay, but Romeo and Juliet, you know, doesn't end well, and that is like one of the greatest romantic stories ever told.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's just the whole, I think what constitutes a great romantic story is people going against all odds to for love.
Okay.
I think it's the push for love or the sacrifice for love. You know, how far people go, how many continents do they go to reignite the love? If they're different lifetimes, you know, all those films where people are reincarnated and, you know, somebody's like, I will find you in so many lifetimes and, you know, and so on and so forth. That whole drama of, despite maybe not being from the same social class or same race, you know, despite racism, despite every other thing that can be trying to stand in the way, people fight to be together, no matter what happens at the end, you know, despite even death can't keep them apart. So I think tragedy, I think romance is basically the ultimate love. It's about love more than, you know, people getting together and living happily ever after. I think it's really more about love.
So you would say, in essence, that it's more about the strength of the love. And so in that stead, you can still say Titanic is a romantic movie.
Yeah, I don't know that I thought about it. It probably is a romantic
movie. Yeah, because if you notice, it uses, like, I think the story itself is a flashback in its own self. Like, somebody is telling a story, and it appears that the story the person is telling is the story of the love that she experienced at a particular point in time. So it must not necessarily be how it ends, because, you know, the issue of till death do us part, or forever after, you know, happily forever after, and all that kind of thing, where the story kind of cuts off and then it leaves the viewer with that kind of happy feeling of, you know, love. And it appears that, you know, what do you think? Do you think romantic movies are commercially viable these days? I mean, I have no data saying this, but
I still believe they are. I believe, I think that's one of the you know, one of the easier stories to tell these days. You know, human beings, that connection, we're always looking for that connection. People always want that. That thing is never going to change, no matter the gender involved, no matter what is happening on the outside. The whole yearning to be with someone else exists everywhere, all the time. And nothing is ever going to change that. It's one of life's greatest, you know, mysteries. The need for someone to want to be with another. It's never going to change.
And it's never going to change enough for people to feel like they must go and, you know, watch it. You see, I think I remember a discussion we had in the early times when we started this podcast. And I remember that I think it was it Monica that said something about what is commercially viable, especially in the Nigeria, that filmmakers will put their money in what is commercially viable. Now, apart from maybe Valentine's season, where people just feel like, oh, they have to, you know, go see a movie that has some kind of Valentine theme in it, or maybe a love story because it's the season. Do you feel like somebody just goes to watch a movie that has a love story in, say, sometime in November? Like, say, during election, maybe during election time in America. I'm asking.
I do believe that, you know, I'm guessing, you know, most Christmas movies is romance.
Oh, the Hallmark Channel. Oh my God.
It's almost every Christmas movie is guy meets girl, girl meets girl, guy meets guy, something. Anyway, you know, almost everything. One of the most popular romantic or, you know, romance themed movies is Love Actually.
Okay.
And, you know, and it happens, you know, it's all about people, you know, wanting to connect with someone else. You know, it's always, there's no time, you know, even most action movies, there's the whole element of, you know, the protagonist or, you know, the main character ends up seeing someone and, you know, there's this spark that fly. And even though he's trying to, shoot up everything or trying to jump off a cliff. There's the part where he meets, he sees the woman that he cares about or the man that he cares about. And, you know, things are, you know, there's that romantic element of, oh, I'll do anything for you. Or, you know, even in Tom Cruise's in Mission Impossible, they play on that a bit, the love he has for Rebecca Ferguson. And the love, or the love that he looks like he's that's budding for the new lady that's introduced to the movie. You know, he's torn between wanting to help this lady and wanting to help that lady. And they play on that romantic element, so to speak, even though it's a pure adrenaline
action movie. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's always there. It's an element of most movies. It's very rare to see a movie where there's nothing connected to that. I mean, John Wick started with a love. With the love of his wife that he transferred to his dog, and then before he let it, he shoots up the whole place. But there's still that, oh, there's this love thing there somewhere.
If you're talking about that, because you see, I think every Hollywood movie, not every, like every, then we're saying in totality, most Hollywood movie, their element. I mean, think about James Bond, for example. I mean, you can't even call that elements of romantic movies, because he was having different, there were different women. So it wasn't even something that you could say, oh, that there was a romantic element in it. So okay, think about a show like Bridgerton, for example. Do you remember the Netflix show Bridgerton?
Yeah, I watched the first season.
So there was a first season and there was a second season. And then...
Yeah.
The third one is the one I know I did not see. Now, I honestly would say the reason I watched it, I feel the first one was better because it had like a huge...
It was a novel concept.
Yeah. The second one, you know, it still borders around. Would you call that... That's a romantic series.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it is. Pretty much. It revolves, everything around it just revolves around, you know,
it has the classic Cinderella theme of, you know,
girl. Like actually
yeah, it's basically it's a Cinderella like story.
That's the clothes and everything, the shoes, it's just missing the it's just missing the shoe and they still, you know. At the end of the day, anyways, as far as I know, you know what we can define as a romantic day movie in society, it has evolved, because it appears that, you know, the concept of, like, when you say boy meets girl, now the language has changed. It's everybody now, it's now, you know, everybody, a man could be in love with a man, a woman can be in love with a another woman. As much as, you know, people out there may not agree with it, it is the reality that is facing us on our TV screens and in society in general. So, the thing now is that, you see, there are movies that actually center around the persecution of some of these new kinds of love that, you know, society is adapting to, if that makes any sense. Because, for example, the persecution, somebody comes out of the closet and says, this is who I am, and this is who I love, and, you know, the freedom of, you know, and then the movie centers around the persecutions that they have faced. And then there's a pattern showing, you know, old people, like old movies that have even, you know, embraced, like telling old stories of people who, you know, had this problem in the past and society was not even ready for that kind of, you know, of thinking. And as much as it is, if we say like Netflix is in Nigeria, and I don't even want to get into that discussion about cultural imperialism, we are not going to leave here today. So let's just, maybe we'll just leave it alone for now. But I know that in as much as this Valentine's season is, the issue is that I think what anybody would have described as romance 100 years ago, I mean, whether you watched it from the era of when they had Wonderful Life, or you know, but like the Christmas movies, the Hallmark movies, those are real classics. Those are real, you know, holiday themed movies, because I feel like most people watch the Hallmark channel only during Christmas, and Christmas movies are
exactly
pretty much about, you know, love and romance and family, as the case may be.
Family, yeah.
As the case may be. Okay, no problem. Well, we just got here. We're going to take a little bit of a break, and then we will be back. And we're going to talk about a subject that has been one of my pet peeves, you know, a pattern we've seen in Hollywood whereby certain historical facts or certain historical actors or people are being played by people of a different race, as the case may be. That's when we come back. Welcome back, everybody. And now I want to talk about something that I find a little interesting. And I don't know if it's a pattern, but I think I noticed it a couple of years ago. But I didn't see it as anything. But I guess there is a reason for that, as society is changing and our interactions with the movies. I was an avid comic book reader growing up, and I had the opportunity to see, I think the first, or that's the first one I saw, I don't know if they had anyone before it, the first Fantastic Four movie. That was, I do remember that I watched that movie in Silverbird Cinema in Victoria Island, in Lagos. And that movie, then a couple of years later, I can't keep track of the time, but this was many years ago, because, you know, Fantastic Four, for anybody who does not know Fantastic Four, the comic book characters, basically, they had The Thing, they had Reed Richards, they had Sue, the lady who would turn invisible. I think it was Reed Richards' wife, Sue Richards.
Yes.
And then they also had the Human Torch, Flame One. And and the Human Torch, basically, of course, he was Caucasian or white, and he had a couple of years later, I now saw another version of the Fantastic Four that had Michael B. Jordan play the part of the Human Torch. Now, I didn't, you know, it wasn't like any particular thing, you know, I didn't call it anything, and I am well aware of, for anybody who know, who has followed all these histories of the monarchy, and you would know anything about the Boleyns. And then I think it was AMC that made a movie that had Anne Boleyn, cast her as a black lady. And and then I know that also Cinderella, I think there's a version of Cinderella that is black. That they had an African-American lady. And in much more recent times, they also had The Little Mermaid. Thank you very much. The Little Mermaid. And so, you know, I came across this article. I think it was like, you know, the Netflix has a Cleopatra, a new Cleopatra movie coming out. Or I think it's supposed to be released in May, but it's basically Cleopatra. And, you know, Cleopatra is not a hidden personality. Everybody knows who Cleopatra is. Yeah. But I think now the grounds with Netflix, as far as I'm concerned now, is that Netflix, no, it's not Netflix that has the grounds. I just think I should just read a little portion of the article. It's something that was published by OK Africa, that make commentary on some of these movies, especially African movies or African-oriented movies. It says the Netflix epic Queen Cleopatra, which is slated to be released on May 10, has sparked controversy in Egypt. The trailer for the docudrama premiered last week and triggered a lot of dissenting opinions about Netflix casting decision. The drama featured Adele James, a British actor of mixed heritage, as Queen Cleopatra. Who are the people that actually are having a grouse with this? Some Egyptian academics argue that Cleopatra, who was born in Alexandria in 69 BC, was European, not black, according to Variety. That's Variety said this.
Yeah.
An Egyptian lawyer has reportedly filed a formal complaint asking for legal action to be taken to block Netflix entirely in Egypt. So I'm thinking that, I mean, we've had the Human Touch, the different race. We've had the Little Mermaid in a different, we've had Cinderella in a different race. We've had even Anne Boleyn that the whole world knew was, in fact, maybe she was even the only black person in that movie because I saw it. So what's the big deal? What's the big deal here?
Well, I think part, a huge part of Egypt's identity is based on the cultural heritage. You know, everybody that thinks of Egypt thinks of the pyramids, the Sphinx, and they have a huge tourism. They have a lot of their income comes from tourism. So for you to, for what they consider to be one of the greatest historical figures, to have the identity not gotten right, I think they have a right to complain. I believe they have a right to complain.
Okay, so would you say that you just feel that do you think that the differences is because of the person involved? So okay, just a hypothetical or something here. How about British people complained about, or probably they did, maybe I may have missed it, complain about Anne Boleyn, because I know that the internet has always even had the uproar and cried about every, you know, the, some of the characters.
They must have complained about, I'm certain they must have complained about Anne Boleyn. If they didn't complain, but I do believe they complained, if they didn't complain, it might just be because maybe she wasn't, you know, a loved figure, so to speak. She was famous, but not so loved. I mean, just to show as an example of what British people might have been complaining about, let's look at this fictional character, James Bond. And okay, the rumors that I tried to introduce, make James Bond a black character or a character of, you know, of color. Everybody's like, why leave James Bond alone? James Bond is a white man, is a white man. You know, they even had to find a way in the last one, you know, that they did to introduce a new 007, so to speak, but not necessarily Bond, you know. And even at the, you know, they found a way to give it back to Daniel Craig before, you know, he had the incident he had in the movie. You know, so they will complain. I'm sure they must have complained about, I find it hard to believe they didn't complain about.
Oh, I'm sure they did complain.
Being black. Yeah. So
I'm sure they did complain. so maybe we are just regurgitating, like we are just following a pattern or a cycle. Because I don't know. Yeah. Or maybe you want to ban Netflix in Egypt. I don't know that I know it was AMC that made the Anne Boleyn, because Anne Boleyn, I think maybe if her memory was that of some kind of villain, maybe if it was vilified or, you know, but she had followers. And I mean, for anybody who knows the story, there were people that felt that she shouldn't have gone the way she did.
Yeah.
But what I know as a fact is that complaining on the internet is not new. I mean, when they killed the old Captain America and then Captain America went black from Disney, people complained.
Yeah,
when definitely. They had the Little Mermaid. And these are, and I mean, we are talking about fictional characters now. We're not even talking about like real characters. People complained. So I wouldn't be surprised if you say that reading this news, like then I would say, okay, it's a normal course of things. But what I want to understand, Onyeka, is that I want to understand, where is this going? And okay, let's pretend tomorrow. let's just pretend tomorrow now that I'm thinking of maybe some kind of national Niger. Because is it okay that, like, if we are trying to tell a story, what do you think? Do you think that if we're trying to tell a story of the past, shouldn't movies be representing these stories as is, like to capture, depict the real person,
exactly. They should.
The real
they should.
Element of, you know, what happened. Yeah. What do you think about that? Like,
I'm in total agreement. They should try to capture the real essence. I think maybe in this instance, what might be causing controversy is not necessarily that the actress doesn't look like Cleopatra could have looked, but maybe because she just doesn't have the right ancestry. You know, someone can look a certain way, you know, you can get someone that looks like this person, but oh no, this person is from the wrong ancestry. And so, no, we want it to be as historically accurate as possible. I think that's where the cognitive dissonance comes in here in this situation. Because for people who, most people who have heard of Cleopatra, they might have the image that Netflix is bringing in their heads. When I saw the cast, or when I saw it, I'm like, this person to me looks like what I would expect, maybe, for example, an Egyptian to look like. But it seems the historians are adamant that, no, actually, Cleopatra has a European look, which is quite different from what the traditional Egyptian look like. And given what happened in the story, the fact that Mark Antony and both Caesar, they both fell in love with her, maybe they fell in love with her because she looked like one of them, so to speak.
Ah, okay.
Because I don't really get where the anger is coming from. Because the actress looks Egyptian.
She does.
From the trailer, she looks Egyptian. So, or what my understanding of what an Egyptian looks like. You know, so I'm wondering why they're angry.
So when they write an article and they say some Egyptian academics, right?
Mm-hmm.
I am thinking maybe they have this need to preserve, you know, historical elements as depicted in film. I know that Hollywood has this very strange history about, you know, the era of communism and all that. And, you know, they had all this, I mean, like, is it the these bodies that were created then, even in the era of people like Charlie Chaplin, some of these histories, like, I mean, there's stories about how, you know, Charlie Chaplin was chased out of industry because of, you know, there are histories like that, whereby now you could say there is this need to make sure that stories that get to TV have some kind of regulation so that we are trying to tell our audience a certain kind of story that is consistent. I mean, from a layman's point of view, I used to think that you could just write a story, the story is good, we put it in film. Maybe fiction. But if you want to tell, let's say you want to tell a story of Nelson Mandela now, and you want to go and bring Tom Cruise to act as Nelson Mandela, then you're going to have a problem.
You're going to have to create a scene where Nelson Mandela, you know, dropped off a cliff.
the thing is, I feel like the only reason this will be happening is because, you know, I'm all for inclusiveness. I just have to say that I'm all for it. Agreed. I am also for, like, if we are trying to depict a story in Hollywood, like for me, the Cinderellas and the, you know, I'm not against it. It's okay. Let's have a black Cinderella. I'm good. Let's do it. No problem. Let's have a black Captain America. No problem. But I'm thinking of like the Anne Boleyn and the, you know, like this particular Cleopatra, you know, then, you know, these days you want to have these conversations and, you know, people, the internet starts crying. That's my, everybody just, you know, they just cry. And at the end of the day, you find out that if it's a film that Netflix has made, what is the worst that will happen? The worst that will happen is that they won't show it in Egypt, or they take it off from the Egyptian audience. But the Egyptian audience will watch it one way or the other. Go ahead.
They will still watch it. It's probably just initial, you know, control. You know, sometimes, I actually feel sometimes these things are done to, you know, make it easier for us. It's a form of marketing.
I believe in you.
It's a form of marketing giving. You know, it's the controversy will make people say, okay, what really happened? Okay, they say, okay, let's see the ball actually did a good job. And before you know anything, they get better numbers than they might have expected. You know, imagine what the film Passion of the Christ went through.
Yeah. Bro, you know that. In fact, I was listening. I've listed Michael B. Jordan. You know the popular, you know, Jesus Christ Superstar. That you have there's a version. I think the latest version that was popular for Broadway had John Legend as Jesus Christ. The latest version. I don't know whether there's another popular one that came out after that one. It had John Legend as Jesus Christ in Jesus Christ one. The same songs as the ones that they had in the 70s and everything is the same thing, but John Legend played the part of Jesus Christ. So all these things are the question. If you ever watch Good Times, if you remember Good Times, the very first episode of Good Times I remember was when JJ made a picture of a black Jesus and put in the parlor, and everybody was like, they started that whole conversation and all that. But then you have John Legend playing the part of. So the thing is that I feel there is this drive or there is this drift. On the one hand, I'm thinking inclusiveness. But for characters now, I feel like the Egyptians, I mean, it's their story. I feel like if the South Africans, it's their own story. I feel if the South Africans want to, like if like I gave this example of it, they want to cast Tom Cruise as Nelson Mandela. And the South Africans will say, look, we don't want that kind of thing because we understand that. I get all this inclusiveness, but please, can we just try to?
they've already used Morgan Freeman, you know, you might as well just go all the way.
It may not look exactly, but it should have some semblance of something. Let's say Angelina Jolie, Queen Amina, as an example. What do you think about that?
One of the luckiest of people that has been cast in the movie is Malcolm X. He's one character that they've always got to write. Every time I see a Malcolm X movie, I'm like, this is Malcolm X. His face hasn't changed. There's no difference between the Malcolm X in real life and the Malcolm X in movies. So if we get people like Malcolm X right, we might as well get them all right. Come on.
Well,
Hollywood don't be lazy.
It's not being lazy. I don't think it's something that is being lazy. You may actually be right on the element of publicity, because I don't know who wants to watch a Cleopatra movie now, but it's something I'll now be inclined to watch just because. I don't know if you remember, was it in The Sopranos? One dude they were trying to make him a rap star or something. I can't exactly remember the dude. And then they try to set up this thing whereby they try to arrange a shooting. But it was a shooting that went bad because they shot him in the bomb. In the bomb. And for somebody who was supposed to be a rap star, if they shoot him in the bomb, that is bad for your street cred, dude. That is bad. It's not even good for business. So that's how that particular thing, I think it did go south, per se, because I feel like you want to do publicity, you want to do it right. You know, we know that 50 Cent was shot 9 times, as they said. And the time that 50 Cent came out, that was all we heard. Oh, I've been shot 9 times. I'm shot 9 times. And it helped with the publicity. So this may be a publicity stunt, or it could be that the Egyptian academics, as the story says, they really want to, you know, they don't want their history to... Maybe for the younger generations to start getting a tainted picture of what it should actually look like. And that is okay. Okay. I think we'll take a break now. When we come back, we're just going to look at least 2 major previews of movies that are coming out and a trend. And then...
the trailer reactions.
And we're back. Have you noticed anything new out there that became a kind of blockbuster? I'll give you a simple example. Like, if we say something like Avatar, the Way of the Water, right?
Yeah.
It's still a spin-off of an old Avatar.
Oh, of course.
Now, if you say, for example, the Avengers, it made, you know, billions of dollars or hundreds of millions of dollars, just as a ballpark figure, then, of course, it is a spin-off of old comic book audiences from as far back as the 70s. And, you know, coming into this times and, you know, with the coming off of Marvel and Disney by Marvel, huge audiences that span across generations. We are talking of a little boy that's 5 years old may want to watch Spider-Man, and the same thing, a 60-year-old guy too, who will want to see it because when he was a child, they watched it. And I'm saying that, you know, with some of the new trailers I'm seeing out, like this Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. This the trailers that just, you know, dropped. Some of them are still new out there. And Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. And then this other one, A Quiet Place. The Quiet Place 2. I think they had like two movies about The Quiet Place. One and then two, which is like a horror genre. Picked up, it did well. So probably another one. And then, of course, you have this Godzilla and Kong. Didn't they make a movie about Godzilla and Kong, like, movie the year, 2020? Wasn't that in 2020?
Yeah.
Because I remember, I think because of COVID, I do remember that that's the time I watched it.
They did.
Yeah, so I'm thinking that, is there a place for new stories in terms of Hollywood box office now?
I think, you know, just this is just me going out on a limb here. I think a huge challenge for writers now is how do you get people from different generations to like something new, considering the, for lack of a better word, limitations that have been placed on people, given the new understandings that have come out, like you know, nobody wants to be called a, you know, a patriarch, or nobody wants to look like they're being sexist, or nobody wants to look like the, you know, they're not being inclusive enough or being diverse enough. So for you to, you know, sort of get a critical mass that will go watch a movie, you have to look for those neutral stories that are popular and try and do like a sequel or a prequel. You know, this is what happened, this is what came before, or this is what's coming after. And it's just easy for people to just get to the story, become introduced to a genre without having to fight labels and, you know, and go along that whole path of, oh, why did you do this? Or why did you do this? Or why did you make this person a this? Or why did you make that person a this? Or, you know, you're not adding enough of this, or it's not diverse enough, or it's not, you know, I just feel that that's it. So it's making it harder for writers to come up with new stories that will include everyone. You know, I'm sure you'll get a new generation that flow with certain stories. But for someone like me, I have a traditional sense of how certain films should be. I'm wired to like films a certain way. You know, I might be wrong, but I'm wired to like films a certain way. So if you come out with a new movie and maybe you have a certain kind of person being the action figure, I'm like, this is not possible from the way I understand how this sort of movie should be made. So I might not watch it. So it's easier to just create a spin-off of an old story that did well by saying, okay, you've watched this, you understand how this goes. So, hey, this happened just before this happened. Or this happened right after this happened. I just see it that way. But, you know, I may be wrong.
I mean, whether wrong or right, I think everybody's entitled to their own opinion, of course, which is okay. The thing for me is like, you may be right in some sense, but I'm thinking more of the money that they make in, let's say, the cinema or whatever avenue your movie wants to go. So now, if you're not telling a historical fact, Mm-hmm. Or you're not telling a franchise story. What I call franchise stories are stories that have franchise. In fact, well, like, you know, X-Men, Avengers, Fast and Furious.
Yes.
You know, all those franchise movies is what I mean. That's what they are, actually. So if you're not telling those kind of stories, or you're not telling some kind of historical, you know, some historical facts that you feel people may be interested in. You know, we just talked about this Cleopatra. I think the makers, the filmmakers, are just going out and hoping that audiences will care.
Yeah.
It's like, maybe there are people out there, I want to learn the history of you, Cleopatra, and then they go out and watch the movie. But
yeah,
in this particular case, it appears that, like, say, unless you see a trailer, and I don't even know if trailers these days are enough, because if you want to talk about mind-blowing movie trailers, they are everywhere. Mm-hmm. So it's different. And I mean, if you have 24 hours in a day, you want to watch it, and you have time to fit in movies you want to watch, making a choice and where the viewer will want to lean towards something that maybe he has been following. For example, you say Avengers Endgame.
Mm-hmm.
Easy smash hits. They just know that, okay, they've left the viewers, you know, hanging.
Mm-hmm.
And you have this generation of people following this thing, and then they are coming to this point now where they want to. They know that it's going to be a hit any way it is. You understand? It's like you're not looking for how to sell tickets for a classic or Debbie matches.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know that this, you have an audience waiting.
Mm-hmm.
To me, so my thing is that I feel like stories now will filter their way through, you know, the streaming services of some sort, end up in, you know, one platform. I'm talking about like big screen movies now, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Well, Of course. To be honest, I think, you know, the money is always a huge factor for everything that gets made now. So it's easier to tap into an ongoing narrative, ongoing story, and you know, something that guarantees return on investment. You know, nobody wants to. I think there's a less, people are more risk adverse these days in Hollywood. Nobody wants to just put their money on something that, you know, you're trying to tell people, you're trying to convince people of a narrative or of a story. It's easier to just sell something that is already selling. You know, this thing already has an audience.
I agree.
That have it built up. You know, for me, like Fast and Furious, you know, they've gone beyond what the film looked like. It started to be when the film started. You know, some guys just, you know, some people living on the edge, trying to, now these guys have turned to some superheroes and top crime with cars.
Yeah.
The things they do with cars, you know, they drive in space, they use cars to hold off bombs and stop nuclear threats, and you know.
Yeah.
You know, the first Fast and Furious was basically just sold out there to drive fast cars and used to boost cars, basically. Now all of a sudden these people are dealing with agencies that have no names, and it's funny, but it's, we're watching because we're invested in the story. We're like, okay, what's Toretto going to do now for family? You know all that stuff, and it's a guaranteed. And at the end of the day, it's all about, you know, profit. You know, nobody wants to just throw money out there into something that doesn't work. So
absolutely,
hey, if telling those stories is going to keep those companies alive, by all means, they should go for it.
Yeah. But please, they should not make another 4 hours of Justice League again. I beg. I'm begging. I'm not doing it. No matter how much of a franchise it's going to be. I know. Do I love the stories? Am I following them? Yes. But please, I'm begging whoever is in charge not to make that thing. Man, we gotta run. I think we may have overshot our time, but thank you very much for listening to Real Talk Extra. As always, we will be back same time next week. Hope you had a great Valentine's Day, Onyeka.
Yeah, we don't agree for anybody.
Not anybody at all, love, man. Not anybody.
Love a light, man.
All righty.